everybody. It is Katie Kessner. I am the primary host of the Dear Katie podcast, and we are so delighted to have you take this journey with us on our weekly podcast episodes. I just want to remind everyone to do great self-care. Thriving is part of the purpose of this podcast, and we definitely want you to take a break at any time. Warm bath, fresh air, walk a dog, have a bite of chocolate, whatever you need to do good care for yourself. Just as a reintroduction, if you're not familiar with me, I am the woman who was on the cover of Time magazine at age 18 as the first in history to speak out nationally and publicly as the victim of date rape. And HBO made a film about me, and I went on to become the executive director of the Take Back the Night Foundation. We are the oldest, largest global movement on sexual violence in all forms for all people in the world. So we encourage you to visit our website for lots more information. So I'm going to turn it over to our host and our guest for today. Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner.
And this is Claire Kaplan. I want to remind our listeners that sometimes we have conversations in this podcast that can be difficult for our listeners to hear. And so I want to remind you that it's important to reach out for emotional support from friends or family, a counselor if you have one, or even a hotline. And we can provide additional resources to you, which will be found on the Take Back the Night Foundation website. And I'll share that address with you at the end of the podcast.
Thank you so much, Claire. And our special guest today is Zabi Yamasaki. Zabi, we always start with a little bit of a brief bio, who you are, where you grew up, whatever you'd like to share, so our listeners get to know you personally first. Would you kindly introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. It's so wonderful to connect with you today. My name is Zabi Yamasaki, and my pronouns are she and her. I am the founder of an organization called Transcending Sexual Trauma Through Yoga, which is an organization that empowers survivors of sexual assault to heal through the practice of trauma-informed yoga. I am based in Los Angeles, and I live here with my beloved partner, Garrett, and my son, Hudson, who is 6 years old. I am the author of the book Trauma-Informed Yoga for Sexual Assault Survivors, Practices for Healing and Teaching with Compassion, as well as the accompanying card deck. And this work is my love, it's my passion, and I'm so honored to share a little bit about it with you today.
Fantastic, Zabi. Yes, and I love the card deck and everything else, and you have such good support team for your work. So we can talk a little bit about that later and Take Back the Night and your support thereof. But tell us a little bit about your own journey to survivorship.
Sure. You know, I am a survivor of sexual assault. I was raped in 2007 during my time in college at the University of California, Irvine. And so much of what I have navigated in my journey as a survivor has been somatic. I suffered from debilitating panic attacks and insomnia, chronic pain, GI issues. I mean, you name it, so much of what I was navigating was sort of the daily somatic impact of triggers that I was experiencing every single day. And, you know, especially now in my professional work, I never imagined that my career would take me where it has today. And a large portion of all of my professional roles have entailed giving presentations on trauma. And without a doubt, after every presentation I would facilitate, there would be a number of survivor disclosures that followed. And in my numerous conversations with survivors over the course of my career, there's been some pretty consistent themes that have come up. One has been this need to feel something tangible. so many survivors shared with me also about the somatic impact of their trauma that they were navigating, and that they wanted a way to regain power and control of their bodies. And two was just not being quite ready to process their experiences through talk therapy. And I knew through my own journey as a survivor and the thousands of survivors that I have held space for over the course of my career, I've been in this movement for 15 years. I knew I wanted to create a program that spoke to the language of the body, something that was soulful and intersectional and culturally affirming at its core, because we're just losing too many survivors who don't feel comfortable coming forward to seek support because services aren't always accessible to their needs. So that's really, you know, brought me to this moment in my career where we're now supporting over 40 different college campuses and trauma agencies with integrating trauma-informed yoga into the scope of their services. And it's been a really exciting time to see how passionate so many organizations are about integrating the body into the healing process.
Zabi, with regard to, let's go back for one, you know, you just said a ton of great things. Let's think about how was it that you came to yoga as a healing methodology. You described, you know, the insomnia and the GI issues and everything you were going through after your personal assault. And just to clarify, you went through someone, it was someone you knew. It was not a stranger assault?
It was a stranger assault.
Oh, it was. That's why I was like, I wasn't sure, but I wanted to make sure that that was more clear, because that would put you in, you know, a more unique category from most of our guests, because we don't have a lot of stranger assaults. So can you just share just 2 seconds? Was it never, they were never found, or like, was there any outcome from that, your personal case?
No, I didn't feel comfortable pursuing the criminal justice process because that just didn't feel like a supportive option to me at the time. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yes. As so many do. Yes.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I wanted to loop back to, and Claire, I'm sure has more questions, but I loved where you're providing inclusivity and, you know, recognizing the complexities of various demographic backgrounds and, you know, all kinds of experiences that relate to the healing process that might be unique to different people. Could you talk a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Sure. You know, as a woman of color, as a mother, as a South Asian woman who's doing yoga work within this healing realm, it feels particularly important to me to really create avenues where survivors of all racial and ethnic backgrounds can feel comfortable seeking support. And in the first quarter, we actually implemented the Trauma-Informed Yoga is Healing program at UCLA. There were 40 survivors who submitted interest forms who wanted to participate in the program. And of those 40, only 10 of them were currently connected to a survivor advocate or to the counseling center in some capacity. So the other 30, this was their first entry point in getting any type of support related to their trauma. We were also seeing a very diverse range of survivors who were coming forward, starting with the Trauma-Informed Yoga as Healing program, and then many of them felt empowered to seek additional resources after participating. And I think there's something really powerful about starting with that safety and stability within the nervous system. You know, I think if I had had a program like this when I was going through my experience as a survivor during college that gave me the tools somatically to address everything that I was holding in my body before feeling ready to report to the police what had happened to me or even open up a Title IX investigation on my campus, I think I would have been more prepared to seek out those resources. But I just don't think we talk enough about, you know, we can't keep doing things the way that we've always done them. You know, we're really limited in terms of the resources that we're providing to sexual assault survivors. They deserve so much more in their healing journey, and they deserve modalities that meet them, you know, amidst the many nonlinear aspects of the healing process.
And Zabi, my next question is important because those survivors listening to the podcast who've not really fully embraced yoga may not even know what it looks like or sounds like or what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And having a Take Back the Night put together Shine Your Light yoga sessions like all over the country. Can you share a little bit with our listeners what it all those things look like, feel like for survivors to experience so there's less of any barrier from not knowing?
Absolutely. I love this question and I really appreciate you asking it because I think there's something so powerful about survivors coming into a space where they don't have to share any details of the trauma that they've experienced if that's not comfortable for them, that they can be held in a space where they are seen, where others understand what they're going through, the beauty of sort of the palpable energy of healing in community with others. And when I'm leading trauma-informed yoga classes, there's a couple of different aspects that I really integrate into the way that I'm holding space. One is definitely understanding the impact of trauma on the nervous system and really taking the larger frameworks of trauma-informed care and applying that to the way that I hold space. So trauma-informed care is factoring in things like safety, trust, choice, control, empowerment, and cultural competence. And the way that that kind of translates within a yoga space is using really supportive and invitational language, really reminding survivors that the choices that they make with their body in any of the shapes that I'm cueing are always supported and celebrated. It's being mindful of utilizing trauma-sensitive breath work. We know that there can be a lot of triggers related to the breath for survivors of sexual trauma. So really inviting them to breathe in ways that feel supportive and easeful and accessible for them. It's being mindful of, you know, never giving physical assist or always having a consent framework as it relates to every aspect of the way that I'm holding space. And I just think that, you know, it's so powerful. I feel like I've been so blessed in my career. I never imagined, you know, that it what started with very humble beginnings of me as a traveling yogi, like I had 10 yoga mats in the back of my trunk in my car, and I would drive from one rape crisis center to university to trauma agency to teach these classes. And obviously that wasn't sustainable as much as I loved it, but it led to me teaching and training other yoga teachers and healing professionals in this modality. And, you know, now there are thousands of practitioners who are leading their own classes all over the country. So it's a pretty special thing for me to hold.
Oh my gosh, it sounds so beautiful, Zabi. I mean, you just, even just talking to you, I think is a healing process because you sound so inviting and welcoming. The other thing I wanted to sit with too for a second, Zabi, is like, I think I am, you know, in the skin I'm in, the body I'm in, and even I think there's, especially for, well, all of us, there's body shaming. There's like, how can I feel comfortable in the skin I'm in going? And can I, what if I can't fold my knees? What if I can't bend over? How do I even start if I'm already telling myself I can't? That was what I wanted to ask you is like for our listeners today that have never come to their mat and don't have a mat. I think one of my goals is when we talk to you is like let's open these yoga studio doors and experience to more and more survivors. But I think there's a lot of barriers that many of us carry from a million different reasons. It might be like, oh my gosh, is yoga for white people? You know, like, and I love that you already said you're not white. You know, I think you're bringing inclusivity, you're bringing diversity, but I think there's what if I can't afford Lululemon, right? I just want, like, I don't have the gear. What can I wear?
Or if I'm getting older and I can't get down on my knees.
Yes, like all of it, Zabi. I think one thing we can accomplish in today's interview is, like, how do we bring more people to their mats in a comfortable way? So, and what are like, if they have trepidation, Zabi, to even go to an event or go to a session, go to a studio, what are things that they could do to build their confidence and find out if, I mean, I will just say, like, I loved your travel yoga journey, because think about, I have to go speak all over the country. Oftentimes I never could get my mat to go on the plane with me, but I was in all kinds of studios and all kinds of experiences, and some were amazing and some kind of weren't. So how can a survivor listening to us today learn more about what's going to be a good fit? So I don't want them to walk into a studio and say, like, Zabi promised, Katie promised, like, and look what happened. You know, I want to, like, what can they do to prep and prepare and find out?
Absolutely. I think this is such an important question. And I think about that there are so many survivors who will start with me on week one of the 8-week program. And many of them, you can feel sort of the trepidation in the room. You know, it's a big step for someone to maybe even identify as a survivor coming into, you know, this trauma-informed yoga as healing class. And maybe they've never even identified to someone else that they're a survivor. It can be really nerve-wracking to come into a space where, even though you may know there's other survivors in the space, you don't know them, and you're, you know, having this sort of intimate relationship with your body after it has experienced violation is a really scary process that takes a lot of gentleness and patience and self-compassion. And I think in many ways, that is really what I try to cultivate with people first, is oftentimes I will, with the language that I'm sharing, that it's very invitational, I'll look around the room and everybody's doing something completely different, you know, and some people might be taking a nap, other people are moving through sun salutations, and that's one of the most powerful moments that I can experience both as a survivor and as a healing practitioner, when people feel safe enough in their bodies to really honor their choices. And it takes time. You know, I'm not going to say that it's something that's going to happen overnight. I think even just arriving, showing up into this space is the hardest part, and that will always be enough. So oftentimes I'll invite someone, I'll say, you know, take a few moments to acknowledge the fact that you made it to your mat today. So often that's the hardest part. If you wanted to find one shape and stay there for the entire time, that would be amazing and supported. This is your body and always your practice. And what I find is that the language really starts to become embodied for folks. So it becomes so much bigger than them honoring what feels right for them on their mat, but then starting to allow that sort of empowerment and those choices to ripple with them as they move through the world. You know, I worked with a survivor of domestic violence who, in class, she was in camel pose, and she made this intentional choice to come out of camel pose because she was really uncomfortable. And that might seem like a seemingly small choice, but for her, making that decision to get out of a shape that felt uncomfortable in her body was really revolutionary for her. And that started to impact the way that she honored herself and honored her other choices. Ultimately, she left this relationship that was abusive. I won't say that it was the yoga that, you know, ultimately led to that, but I think there are so many modalities when we can just allow ourselves even to try, you know, even exploring with the breath, even listening to some affirmations and seeing how they land on your body. You know, you don't need a yoga mat. You can sit on a chair. You can really start to practice embodiment in ways that feel available and accessible in the moment. And so I would say to practice gentleness and compassion, and also know that you're worthy of finding healing practitioners that work for you. There are questions that you can ask to yoga studios around, are their teachers trained in trauma-informed frameworks? Is that included in their yoga teacher training? How do they integrate consent into the framework of their studios and their policies? You know, there are things that you deserve to ask before walking into the doors of a yoga studio, really to ensure your safety and comfort. You deserve that.
I love that. Zabi, here's a different question though. Another thing, if I'm operationalizing, I'm trying to sit with our listeners and the things that might run through their heads. Here's a different one. What if part of my fear is, I love everything you said. I hear you, Zabi. I'm being a listener. Like, I hear you, Zabi. But will I be asked questions like, so what do you do? Like, you know how if you go to a new space and you're a new face, someone inevitably is asking you questions that might already then trigger a million more bad things. Right? So I think, you know, there are studios that have, it's not a code of silence, but it's a code of, we sit in ourselves and we don't talk shop. We don't talk life. We just sit with this moment as part of the yoga experience. So could maybe you, I don't know if I'm right, wrong. What do you think about what I said?
I'm not sure I completely understand the question. Are you saying?
Well, the question is like, imagine I'm the new person. We've just talked to them, the listener here, and they're like, okay, I think I can do this, but I'm scared because I'm not ready to talk to humans. And I feel awkward if someone asks me a question about my life or experience or background or anything. I just don't know that I'm ready to have a conversation where I can connect in a trusting level with anyone who is in this room with me. I just need to be an island, but also in this group experience with no talking, yeah. Right? How would you, I don't know if I explained it any better, but that's what I was going for.
I would say that's completely valid and completely normal to feel that way. I think going into any new space, there is a lot of fear around, you know, who are these people and is this a safe environment? Is this a trusting space? Or a lot of survivors may not be ready to be seen and they're sort of just, you know, trying to put themselves out there in this new way to experience something that they hope will be healing. And it's why I feel so passionate about the training that I do with yoga studios, because we never want survivors to come into a space and feel like their pain is invisible. And so much of holding space in a trauma-informed way is really doing our own work to be prepared to hold these spaces, to remind people that they don't have to share or do anything that's uncomfortable for them, or that they can leave the class at any time if something's not resonating with them. You know, I think in many yoga spaces, you know, you'll hear things like, you know, plan to only drink water at the designated breaks, or stay in the room the entire time, you know. And so much of my work with yoga teachers is really undoing a lot of these unnecessary cues that can make the spaces feel harmful when survivors are really trying to come to these spaces to heal. So I don't know if I answered your question.
You totally did. Abby, that was
You absolutely did. Okay. That's great.
You totally did. I'm just trying to I think what you're doing is so beautiful and brilliant. And I think I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver to our listeners.
Yes.
That's there's only one Zabby. There's only I'm just saying, I'm being honest. There's not every space, having done my own, accidental traveler type work. and finding yoga studios where I thought I could breathe. And then I was like, oh my God, everybody in here is a goddess who is thriving on who can outbend and outflex. And I was like, I didn't come for this competition. Yeah. And it felt really not good. And I want to be honest, I think the questions you just suggested and the vision you've created and the methodology you're going for is what every studio that wants to be truly caring for survivors healing has to get there, Zabby. So I'm saying there should be a gold standard. and some sort of, we have Take Back the Night created a trauma-informed studio logo, but I'm also thinking there might be a way for us to partner together to get all those studios to have even better care than what we've been able to recommend. Mm-hmm. Based on what you're saying, Zabby, it's just brilliant. Yeah. So I'm super excited.
My experience with yoga is fairly limited, though I always enjoy it. And I have been in some really wonderful, welcoming, safe spaces with yoga. But I know that's not been true for many people. And I also know how much it can benefit people who've experienced trauma. And so I wish that there was a way of, if there's a, well, and that's something, we could do it at Take Back the Night Foundation, but to have a place where people could find those studios, and just be able to look, I live in Omaha, is there a yoga studio, near me that has this kind of training, because it can be hard for people also to, it takes a certain kind of fortitude to advocate for yourself, and it's always a good thing to learn, but to call studios and say, so have you done this training? Are you experienced in this? Mm-hmm. And they might say they are, but they may not really be.
Yeah.
I totally agree, Claire.
I think you bring up such an important point, Claire, and I did want to share about a resource for the survivors who are listening today. The Breathe Network is an incredible organization that offers holistic healing support for survivors of sexual assault, and all of their practitioners offer their services from a trauma-informed lens and on a sliding scale. And you can search by your geographic location or by the modality. So they have trauma-informed yoga, massage, acupuncture, really, art therapy, a breadth of holistic healing modalities specifically for sexual assault survivors. So it's just a great resource for you to look into if you're really passionate about working with a trauma-informed practitioner, because you deserve that. And I know how scary it can be to venture into these studio spaces. And I have a lot of classes, audio classes online, if it's something that you want to just kind of experience for yourself in the comfort of your own home, sort of seeing how it lands for you in your body within your own sort of safe container that you create. There's just lots of options available.
Let's talk about that, Zabby. Tonight I'm all about, if you've not noticed, I'm like, let's make sure everybody feels good about, how do I do this? So they tune into you. Is it free? And what equipment do they need? And where should they be? A screen, let's talk shop. What happens? Where do they find this? How do they go there? What do they need to wear? How long is it? The whole thing.
Well, so I teach an 8-week trauma-informed yoga as healing series online that is self-paced. So It's offered on a sliding scale. We have never turned folks away for lack of financial resources. So there are a number of themes that we cover within this 8-week series, themes around safety, trust, boundaries, assertiveness, self-compassion. Each class is about 60 minutes. We spend sort of 15 minutes going over, you know, the theme for the week, and I'll kind of share different affirmations and different ways that we can sort of set the intention for the space. And then the remainder of the time is spent on the trauma-informed yoga's healing practice. It's sort of a mix between a restorative class and a vinyasa class. It's really taught within a sort of slow, gentle pace. And you can, you know, do the class in your living room, from your bed, on the couch, on a chair. You know, that you'll notice that the language that I use when I'm teaching the classes really creates a space for you to meet yourself wherever you might be in that moment. And maybe in that moment, it's just laying and resting and letting the words sort of land for you on your body. So you can find out more about this series on my website, which is abiyamasaki.com. And I also have a number of free classes on my Instagram page. If you click on the link on my Instagram, you can also find a number of free audio classes and just resources on my Instagram as well that are really supportive and survivor-centered.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Claire, what else should we talk to Zabi about?
Oh, golly. I think that Zabi, you explain things so clearly and beautifully, and I don't know that I actually have any other questions because I think it's right there. And thank you for the work you're doing, because this is really important.
Oh, well, thank you all so much. Did Norton end up sending you all the copies of the book and the deck? Did you get them?
Yep. We're going to put them all in notes for our listeners listening. Like, all of Zabi's awesome resources will go in the notes for the episode. I kind of have one final question. Sure. Zabi, it was, like, you mentioned you have a son and you have a husband or partner. You said partner. I don't know if he's a he, him pronoun.
Husband.
but I was thinking also maybe for our listeners to give them encouragement and hope. Like, a lot of us want to know, like, you gave us a format and a pathway and an option, a modality that might get us there. But I think a lot of people are like, at the end of that path, what can I hope for? What can I look forward to? And some people need to know there'll be love. Some people need to know there'll be, I'm going to set aside an eating disorder or an addiction. Some people need to know, I think you're a clear example of you thrived and survived, mm-hmm. and you found some glorious life. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's not glorious every second, but I thought maybe, what are your closing thoughts on, like, hope and healing and beyond thrivership, survivorship, beyond our assault? Mm-hmm. What else is making you happy?
This is such a sweet and sacred question. And I, you know, I think about the years of, you know, I have survived multiple experiences of trauma in my life. And the one thing that I think yoga helped me with is that it helped me uncover my light when it got really dim because of the different types of trauma that I've experienced in my life. And, you know, that light was always there, just waiting to be tended to and nurtured. And, you know, I think so much of my healing also came in being in community with other survivors, to see that collective strength and tenderness and resilience, and knowing that it didn't need to look a particular way, that everybody was invited in. You know, there's something incredibly palpable about just belongingness and feeling seen. And I think I found such purpose in the work that I was doing that it healed me, you know, and I'll never say I'm fully healed because, you know, my partner will attest to this. I think being married to a survivor, I know has not been easy for him. We have certainly had our fair share of ups and downs, and he has held space for me in all the ways that my trauma is triggered in life, by the news, in toxic work environments. I mean, there's always something. Life keeps lifing. So we're never immune from sort of navigating the next storm. But it's also been so beautiful to be held and supported when I never knew if I was going to find a love that was going to be able to hold me in you know, sort of those tumultuous waters that I navigated. And now my son, who is also my miracle baby, is my rainbow baby. We had a really tragic loss before we had him. When I was 6 months pregnant, I lost a baby. And, you know, that compounded with the journey of surviving sexual trauma has been, you know, was one of the darkest times that I navigated in my life. And now I see this miracle child, Hudson, who he actually just won this award at school. He's in kindergarten. And he won this award in school for having the kindest heart. And
that's so wonderful.
I'm like, I will take the kindest heart over academic achievement any day. You know, like I just had this moment that this just happened this past week. And, you know, my husband and I, and, you know, my parents and my in-laws, we were all there and we're just watching him run up and get his little award for having the kindest heart. And, you know, you have these moments in life that they just take your breath away, you know, like you can't believe all that you've survived. And then, you know, making space for that beauty and that joy, we're all deserving of that. And just thank you for being witness to my story and being open.
Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry, Zabby. There's two last things. I have a feeling someday your son and probably your husband will listen to this podcast. So tell me, because also our listeners have hope from all you've said, tell me one or two things that you think that your partner, your husband does to sit with you and support you. As you well put, it's not easy to be married to a survivor or partnered with a survivor, but tell our listeners like two things that you think your partner or a partner can or should or could do that you absolutely find. Like it could be a small little word choice. Yeah. Like it could be a whole sentence. It could be a touch. It could be a thoughtfulness. Like what do you think for you that has really helped?
I would say one of the most important things that my husband does for me is that he's incredibly validating and affirming, especially when I'm sharing, you know, I might share with him like, gosh, that this happened at work this week, or this thing happened and it was really triggering to me and it brought me back to this experience. And, you know, he never tries to minimize or make me feel like I'm being dramatic or, you know, why are you not over this? Like there's no ounce of judgment. It's just pure compassion. And, you know, I think something he is pretty skilled at is knowing when it's about just listening and holding space instead of trying to launch into like a list of things that might even make it better. You know, sometimes I think we need different things depending on the trigger we might be navigating or what we're sitting with that day. And he's just really good about like, what do you need right now in this moment, or what would feel most supportive? Do you want to talk about it? Do you want me to just listen? And that means so much to me.
I love that, because what you just said, Zabby, is like sometimes, especially men, think they need they're best serving us by coming in and playing Superman and rescuing us and telling us like, here's how I can fix this. Mm-hmm. And that's, hello, Zavi, you don't need that. Yeah. You've got this. You just need like a supportive human. And I love that. So what was the second one?
I think that the second one I would say is his sense of humor. You know, I tend to be, I'm very serious and, you know, I'm a very sensitive soul. I'm very particular about just like the energy I let into my life and just, you know, the relationships that I cultivate. And he has a great sense of humor. Like, for example, the other day I was preparing for a keynote that I was giving and I was practicing my keynote in the mirror, like, you know, just going over my different talking notes. And I didn't realize, but he was like holding our dog and he was kind of, he was just like standing outside the hallway and just like watching me and he's like bouncing the dog. And he's like, it's okay, babe, you've got this. You're a jazz musician. You don't need to practice. You know, like he just adds levity to what can be really serious topics or even just like the pressure that I put on myself that, you know, have to be a perfectionist or I need to say everything in the perfect way and I need to be very clear. And I think a lot of that also comes from being a woman of color in this field that's, you know, dominated by a lot of white male researchers. I mean, there's a lot that I've had to do in my life to work harder than a lot of my colleagues. And so he just helps like make things lighter and he helps me laugh. And I need that in my life and in the work that I do.
I love it. Zavi, my goodness. Mm-hmm. It's fabulous. What a great interview. Thank you, Zavi, Bobby, Zavi. The last thing is I'm pretty sure your kind agent sent me a bunch of your books and cards. So I'm thinking all of our chapters, Zavi, just, you know, so our listeners, if you have never thought about starting a chapter of Take Back the Night, this is your opportunity, an opportunity to be a little more close to Zavi's work and bring it to your locality, your campus, your high school, your college, your med school, your law school. We're starting chapters everywhere. And Zavi's brilliant, awesome work has been sprinkled like fairy dust to Take Back the Night. I just, you know, it's a glorious moment. And this whole interview has been fabulous. But for those of you listening, like if you want to start to bring the goodness of Take Back the Night and the greatness of Zavi to wherever you are, please also go back to Take Back the Night's website and find resources and how to start a chapter and how to acquire some of these resources from Zavi too. So Zavi, closing thoughts before I turn it to Claire?
I don't know. I don't think I have anything else to say. I just have so much gratitude to you all at the Take Back the Night Foundation for the work that you're doing and to all the survivors that are listening today. Just know that you're not alone and you're worthy of so much gentleness and care and compassion. And please reach out if I can support you in any way throughout your healing journey.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And thank you, generally, Zavi, for sharing your wisdom and your work with us. I know that a lot of our listeners are going to be very appreciative about hearing what you're doing and maybe perhaps seek out some of the same for themselves. Mm-hmm. And thank you to our wonderful volunteers who make this podcast possible. And thank you to our listeners for being here, being present, and sharing and listening to hear about the work that Zavi is doing. Help us help other survivors too by subscribing to the podcast and sharing it on your own social media and subscribe to our Facebook and Instagram pages. And if you need support but don't know where to find it, as Katie mentioned just a few minutes ago, if you go to takebackthenight.org, you'll find a list of resources there and a link to our legal support hotline. Just remember, as today's podcast certainly emphasizes, self-care is essential to healing and thriving.
Thanks so much, Claire. And again, Sabi, what a brilliant, incredibly inspiring and accessible interview you've given us. And, you know, I'm internally grateful myself for the work you do. All of us, you know, there's a book I read in college. I'll close with this. I loved it. It's way old because I'm way old. It's called This Bridge Called My Back. It was by a woman of color. And it was just a brilliant part because back when I started turning myself from chemistry and Japanese over to a newly formed first ever, one of the first ever women's studies. Claire, you could speak to this. Like there was no such thing as women's studies. Now there's gender studies, but hello, rogue 90s. We had women's studies, Sabi. And the work you're doing is called the, you know, it reminded me of this book I read that was glorious. And I'll put that in the chat as well, because it's called like all of us sit on each other's backs, but we have to support each other. Mm. We know our back might break, but how strong will we be when we build bridges from our backs?
Mm, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Love the interview. Thank you, Sabi. Everyone, for all our listeners, keep going one day at a time. Together, we will shatter the silence and the violence and continue our healing journeys. Keep tuning in every week for another episode and take care.
So long, everyone.
Thank you again, everybody, for joining another episode of the Dear Katie podcast. I hope very much you found today's episode helpful, empowering, and a way to take another step in that long journey toward healing and supporting those we care about, learning about sexual violence prevention, and also survivor support. For those of you who don't know, again, the Take Back the Night website has tons of great resources, books, self-care options, cool merch. If you're feeling like you need a wearable, we have great t-shirts. Of course, we would love it if you follow along on our free newsletter with news and events going on around the country and even around the globe. And finally, don't forget to like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You'll find our entire community popping up here and there, and recaps of our podcast episodes as well. So together we shatter the silence, and together we end the violence. Take care.